Brewers and Cubs again at Miller Park tonight. White Sox and the Indians again at the Cell. Northwoods League Baseball, the Kenosha Kingfish lost to the Madison Mallards 5-3 at Simmons Field last night. The Kingfish host the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters tonight. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. On this Tuesday, June 12th, should be cloudy and seasonal. Some morning fog, high of 75. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 65. Wednesday, sunny and 79. This morning, overcast, 61 in Racine, 63 in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. Coming up on 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. During my time at WGTD, I have been privileged to speak with two different daughters of Robert F. Kennedy. Some years ago, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend was a guest of Carthage College, and during her visit, she also came to WGTD studios as a guest of the morning show. More recently, I was able to record a phone interview with Carrie Kennedy, who is president of Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights and a very effective human rights activist over the past 35 years. She has put together a truly extraordinary and inspiring book titled Robert F. Kennedy, Ripples of Hope. Carrie Kennedy in conversation with heads of state, business leaders, influencers, and activists about her father's impact on their lives. In this book, Carrie Kennedy is speaking with an interesting array of people who, in various ways, have drawn a tremendous inspiration from the work of her father. I want to read to you a brief excerpt from the book's preface. Carrie Kennedy writes, "I did not set out to pen a biography of Robert Kennedy. Many have been published, and there are more on the way. Instead, I sought to write a book not so much about Bobby Kennedy and history, but about people who, inspired by him, are influencing our world 50 years after his death. Some knew him and worked closely with him. Others were not born when he died in 1968. But he touched all of their lives in profound ways. Each has made a mark on our country or our world, and all consider Bobby Kennedy a profound source of inspiration. Viewing photographs and films from Daddy's 1968 presidential campaign 50 years ago brings back a flood of memories, images of people reaching out to him, almost desperate to touch him, while powerful men, professional football players, and Olympic athletes hold him back with all their might as crowds mobbed him, pulled him closer, insatiable. In defiance of gravity, he leaned over, leaned in, reached out with his full body, light, sinewy, muscular, as if to say with a full heart, I am yours, we are one. He never seemed frightened or ill at ease among the throng. He was just there, in the moment. The images also remind me of the aftermath. Daddy returning home, his fingers red and swollen, cufflinks missing because of all the hands grabbing his, wanting to be part of him. Since then, I've heard literally thousands of stories from people around the world, all saying what Robert Kennedy meant to them. Each story is different, but there is one common thread that made RFK so special. He reached deeply into the hearts of his audiences, and what he touched was the noble soul in each of them and in us. By the way, the title of the book, Ripples of Hope, is drawn from some remarks which Robert F. Kennedy delivered in a speech in the mid-1960s during a visit to Africa. Each time a man stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope, and crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance. Now, my conversation with Kerry Kennedy, author of Robert F. Kennedy, Ripples of Hope. Kerry Kennedy, we welcome you to the morning show, and I compliment you on this marvelous book, Ripples of Hope. I think one of the things that is remarkable is that so much has been written about your father, and many books still to come, of course, and you acknowledge this in the foreword to the book, that finding a fresh way to speak about your father is no small matter, but you have managed to do that with this wonderful book. Did anything in particular give you the idea to frame the book in this way?
Well, throughout my life, people have told me that my father was their hero, and that because of him, they decided to pursue whatever career or social justice goal they were engaged with. And so I thought it would be interesting to put together a group of people who have been greatly influenced by Robert F. Kennedy, so that I wasn't looking back at something that happened in the past, but really looking about what's happened because of his influence over the last 50 years and looking forward to the next 50 and why his message of peace and justice and compassion towards those who suffer is still so important today.
Hmm. The people whose thoughts are gathered together here range in age from 18 years old to 90 years old, and of course range in other ways as well. This is a relatively diverse group of people. How did you come up with this particular group of people to share their thoughts about your father?
Well, there are people like Gloria Steinem, who covered my father during the 1960s as a journalist. Others who never knew him but were influenced by him, people like Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, Tim Cook, who is the head of Apple, and Howard Schultz, the head of Starbucks. So people from the business community. I was looking for entertainers. Bono writes one of the best essays on my father that I've ever written. I mean, I've ever read anywhere. And George Clooney tells such a sweet story about being 8 years old when my father died, and from a Catholic family living in Cincinnati. And his father comes to him and says, you know, what do you think we should do about this? And George says, well, I guess we should give something up, like Lent. And his father said, okay, so what do you want to give up? And George says, well, I guess my gun. So George is thinking, well, my favorite game is Cowboys and Indians. I guess I could give up my guns for the day. So he says, guns. And his father goes on television the next day and says, I'm so proud of young George. He's giving up his guns forever. And then George is like, oh, no, wait, no. That's not what I had in mind. And then he goes to school the next day, and his teacher brings him to the head of the class and says, George is giving up his guns forever. And then he goes to the grocery store, and the people behind the counter says, we're so proud of you, George, giving up your guns forever. And so he says, this kind of combination of Catholic guilt and activism has propelled him to this day to be engaged in, you know, in South Sudan and other causes that are creating change across our world. So I love doing this book, writing this book, interviewing people, because you really gain a lot of insight into Bobby Kennedy and his influence, but also gain great insight into people like John Lewis, Marion Wright Edelman, Soledad O'Brien, and so many of the other people I interviewed.
Absolutely. I love a moment in the foreword, which is superbly written by Thurston Clark, who wrote a definitive book about your father's presidential campaign in 1968. I got to interview him about that book, as a matter of fact. In the foreword to your book, Thurston Clark writes that among the great qualities that your father had was, perhaps most important for a leader seeking to unite a bitterly divided people, he had a lively moral imagination. I realize these are the words of Thurston Clark and not your words, but I wonder if you have an idea of what Mr. Clark is talking about there.
Absolutely. And I think I love that phrase, and I've adopted it as my own. So I'm glad you're acknowledging Thurston for having coined it. But he, you know, this is what allowed saved us from nuclear annihilation during the Cuban Missile Crisis, when my father was able to imagine what it was like to be Khrushchev and to have the Soviet military-industrial complex pushing him towards war, just as our own military-industrial complex was pushing Uncle Jack towards war. And because my father and uncle were able to see that, they found a way towards peace. It comes up again in Indianapolis after Martin Luther King was killed, and Daddy was facing a crowd about 1,000 strong in Indianapolis, in the largest African-American neighborhood. Many people had been there for hours waiting for my father's speech, and so they hadn't heard the news about Martin Luther King. But there was a group in the back of the crowd who had heard the news and came equipped with bicycle chains and Molotov cocktails, and they were ready to riot. And Daddy got up and said, for those of you who are angered by this act and move towards hatred, I can say I've had those same sorts of feelings. I understand those sorts of feelings because I had a member of my own family killed. Now try and imagine a political leader standing up in front of a crowd ready to riot and saying, I understand your feelings.
Exactly.
And then he goes on, to say, but what we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not violence. What we need in the United States is not lawlessness, but a sense of compassion towards those who are suffering, whether they be white or they be black. Mm-hmm. And that's what stopped Indianapolis from burning that night. 125 other cities across our country started to burn. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that ability to understand the other, it goes beyond compassion, because it's really an empathy. It's really that moral imagination. It's being so able to understand others and then think through what is the best reaction. What should we do next?
I'm glad you singled out Bono's essay as being especially fine. I think it's a real high point in your marvelous book. And one of the interesting moments in his essay, it's actually his remarks when he accepted the RFK Ripple of Hope Award, is when he calls into question what he calls the phony distinction between pragmatism and idealism. And he feels like your father, Robert F. Kennedy, was a perfect example of someone who was both, who had elements of pragmatism and idealism. He embraced them both, and they were both essential to who he was and what he wanted to accomplish in this world.
Absolutely. And I love that you pointed that out. And then I love his description of what it was like to be in Ireland in when he was growing up. Could I just read a couple of lines for you?
Sure.
So he says, you have no idea what this meant and what it still means to us in Ireland, those of us whose ancestors missed the boat. You know, we stuck around. We ate the potatoes. But in the 1960s and 70s, when I was growing up in Dublin, you could almost taste the regret in having stayed put. Or maybe that was the defeat we were tasting, or ashes. Either way, you cannot exaggerate the miserableness or the miserableism of Ireland at the time. The troubles which Ted Kennedy did more than most to put an end to, the economy, the brain drain. It was like the famous dampness of Ireland had finally soaked into our collective spirit. And for all that Irish resilience and defiance, all our bluff and bravado, our souls had the chills and we couldn't shake them. Mm. Enter the Kennedys.
Mm. I want to make sure that we talk for a second or two at least about the essay in this book, which is, I should say, really is more of an interview. Many of these are actually interviews between you and the guest in question, in this case, entertainer Harry Belafonte, which is so interesting and distinctive in many ways, but especially for a moment when the two of you get into a, I don't know what to say, I was almost going to say a tussle.
Clash.
It is, yeah, about one chapter of your father's life and career, namely the work that he did on behalf of Joe McCarthy. And, of course, this is something that a lot of people have some trouble with, and especially Harry Belafonte. And I appreciated so much that this book is not just a cavalcade of one person after another saying, another thing I loved about your father was, but that you also include in this book this kind of, in a sense, grit. And I think your book is very much richer for it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you know, it's interesting talking to Harry because I love him. He's been on the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Board for 30 years, and he's a hero of mine. He worked with Dr. King, marched with Dr. King, helped Dr. King in the 1960s, and the Women's March was planned in his offices last 2 years ago. So he's just been engaged fully in social activism throughout his life. But he did have this image of my father, which is very common, that my father was a virulent anti-communist and had gone after people with Joe McCarthy, which is not true. My dad did work on the McCarthy, for Senator McCarthy in the 1950s. As he himself put it, I thought that communism was a big threat to our country, and I thought Joe McCarthy was doing something about it, and I was wrong. So I love that about my dad, but he actually ended up really working full-time for that committee for about 4 months.
Hmm.
He spent that time mostly arguing with Roy Cohn, who then became the mentor to Donald Trump, incidentally, but really hated Roy Cohn because he thought that Cohn was so unprepared for any kind of hearings, failed miserably in doing any kind of real research, and was just out there to destroy people's reputation with no reason at all. But Daddy's work on that committee was very specific. It was to look at what U.S. allies were doing to help communist China. And he uncovered that the British were selling rubber to China, which was then using that rubber to create, to put tires on their planes that were then used to bomb Americans during the Korean War. And he uncovered this, and it he put an end to it, which was really the only substantive thing that ever came out of the Joe McCarthy hearings.
Hmm.
He then changed, about a year later, wrote the report which was responsible for stopping McCarthy from going forward.
I really appreciate that moment of sort of clarity is offered, and also the frank conversation between the two of you wrestling with this aspect of your father's career. I also appreciate the fact that there is at least one strong conservative Republican voice in this book, that of Joe Scarborough. Just say a word about why you chose to include Mr. Scarborough in this collection of a tribute to your dad.
Well, he was has always considered my father his hero. And there are a lot of people who are on the right who consider Daddy their hero. Marco Rubio, for instance, and Bill O'Reilly, for instance. The largest collector of my father's memorabilia is Bill O'Reilly. So I thought it was important to bring a wide range of perspectives about my father to the fore and to try and, you know, explore what was it about this man that appealed to black and white, rich and poor, young and old, left and right. And that question is so important today in our country when we are again so terribly divided, and where people feel like they can't even go to dinner with members of their family because there's so much division over politics. And yet, this is a man who is deeply engaged, fully involved, taking on the most difficult issues we had as a country, and was able to bring together people on all sides of the political spectrum.
The book, again, is Robert F. Kennedy, Ripples of Hope. Kerry Kennedy, thank you for bringing the world this marvelous book, and thank you for being part of the morning show today. Best wishes.
Thank you.
The time is 8:32. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. For part two of today's program, we're really happy to welcome back into our studios, first of all, Chris Paulson, who is executive director of the Racine Heritage Museum, and Jim Wardrop, who is on the board of directors there. And they are here primarily to talk about something that the Racine Heritage Museum offers to southeastern Wisconsin each and every summer, the Heritage Walking Tour, in which one can walk through downtown Racine and be, in a sense, taken on a journey back in time through Racine's colorful and interesting history. And these tours have already begun. This past Saturday, I think, was when they began.
Correct.
And they're going to be running now through early September. So we'll be talking about that today for the next few minutes of the morning show. Jim Paulson, Jim Wardrop, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Good to have us here. Before we start talking about the tours, Chris, just remind our listeners a little bit about the Racine Heritage Museum's own history and what it offers to the community.
The Racine Heritage Museum is the custodian of Racine County's material culture. So we care for a collection that consists of roughly 200,000 objects, all related to the unique history of Racine County, an archive of roughly a mile of linear feet of original source documentary material, all, again, related specifically to the history of Racine County. We use that collection. We interpret it to tell stories of Racine County's history through exhibits, through education programs, and through events like the one we're talking about today.
And how long have you been there?
Oh, boy, that's a I started I think we just crossed 29 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So they like you and you like them, apparently.
I hope so, yeah.
Very good. Very good. And Jim Wardrop, how long have you been active at the Racine Heritage Museum?
Oh, gosh. 5 years, 10 years. Who knows?
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yes, yes. It's always a joy to be down there, and more than anything is just people that have come in to the museum, and it just blows my mind, I guess, where people say, you know, I've lived here for 35 years and I've never been to this, and it's a wonderful place.
Mm.
And we encourage people to go in and take a look at the museum after those tours, it's quite surprising that they have so many things in such a small building.
Right. Well, I was just going to say it's a museum that's packed with interesting things, but it's packed in the sense that your space is not limitless, and because the building itself is historical, it's not like you can just add on a wing willy-nilly. I mean, so in a sense, it makes all the sense in the world for you to, in a sense, take your mission beyond the four walls of the museum.
Right, and that's exactly what we're doing here.
Very good. So when did the Heritage Walking Tours begin?
We launched them last year in June, and they were had a very successful first run through September, pretty much the same as this year, although we're expanding the period a little bit. they actually spawned some other projects. What we've done this year is we've updated the tour from last year. We've added some new information and some cool stories. But there are other we're looking to the future to in partnership with the City of Racine and the Professional Women's Network for Service to mark and develop an Underground Railroad and abolition site-based tour also in downtown Racine.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about the process by which the tour, even last year, was first put together, when once you decided it would be good to do some kind of historical walking tour, and you didn't, of course, invent the concept. It's something that happens in other places. But what kind of conversations go on then in terms of how to do this, how to put it together, where to go, what should be on this tour? Just take us inside that process of assembling your first Heritage Walking Tours.
We took a look at kind of key historical sites in the downtown area, and we identified five or six principal sites. You know, some of our older churches, for instance, are all kind of visible from one location. There are landforms that we want. There's geography we want people to be aware of. The river valley, the harbor, and we also see that as kind of a cradle of industry area in the community. So we know we can kind of set these anchors in place. From there, we just connect the dots, and on the way, find all kinds of other cool stories. We brought in a group of people, our tour guides, to help identify sites, because each one of the people that works as a tour guide has a unique perspective, a deep knowledge of Racine area history, but also a unique perspective on it. We've got somebody who's an expert on Abraham Lincoln and the story of his widow, who, you know, living in the area for a short time. We've got another tour guide who is an expert on a fellow named Carhart, who developed the first self-powered automobile, at least the one in the United States. Batman for a while, and he can talk all about some rather obscure story. It's strange that it's obscure because it's such an important story, but and we've got others that have expertise in other areas, theaters, anything you can think of, and so they really contributed to the process. It was a kind of happened organically. It was a wonderful. A wonderful program, and then during the course of the tours, information is added. So the tour guide is in discussion with people that are taking the tours. They're asking questions. The tour guide is bringing those back to the group, and we're looking for ways to kind of enhance the tour every time one takes place, and develop it further so that we're giving a really compelling and complete story to the participants.
And we're kind of also entertaining, hopefully, as well. One of the things that we found out in my travels that the people that I would stop in on a small community and or see what they're doing and everything else, there were studies that were made that if people knew more about the community they were visiting tourism, they would, 9 chances out of 10, if they knew more about the community, they would come back, be return visitors. And so one of the tasks was to, last year, just to kind of put our toe in the water and find out, well, this is a big thing. John Dillinger was here. That's a big thing. Little buttons, so to speak, to get people going. Well, lo and behold, we started to find out we also have a time limit on the tour. We don't want people dropping, after a 5-hour forest tour. And this is about an hour and 40 minutes. So the other thing about it, we found some wonderful news stories and to fold into the tour this year. We had mentioned... I was going to hold up a picture, but this isn't going to work for radio. But things where ore boats used to come all the way down to 4th Street in the Root River. There's pictures of these huge boats, and you're going, people, it's just an amazing thing to see people that have lived in Racine take the tour. We have people that... are visiting, want to know more about it, and we have people that come back for the summer. They live in Arizona or something. They come back in the memory. So it's we're excited about this year. Last weekend we started everything off. It was very difficult though on Saturday to point out a building when you couldn't see it because of the fog.
Yeah, right.
So we would have people feel the building.
So hopefully Mother Nature will
provide
a little less fog this time around.
Yes.
So how does the tour differ from last year's tour?
Well, I think more than anything, we have refined it and delved into more detail some key places, such as the Congress Hotel that used to be down on Lake Avenue. Talking a little more about the time that Mary Todd Lincoln had spent several months, I believe, in Racine after the assassination of her husband, and Tad was looking at the Racine College and things. There are other items where we've taken a closer look at the industrial valley that's on State and State Street and Wisconsin Avenue area, telling a little bit more about the people there. And I think the other thing is that we looked into Dr. Carhart's impact on the Racine community. After further review, we found that the house that he lived in is still standing and not too far away from the garage that he started this internal combustion automobile that that went 4 miles an hour back and forth on Wisconsin Avenue. Mm-hmm. And he was named the Paris World's Fair for Automobiles in 1910, the father of the automobile. So, I mean, there are some things that we've looked at, some things we've cropped a bit. We got into a little more history with I didn't realize that the first high school was built in Racine, Wisconsin. The first high school.
Wisconsin's first.
Wisconsin's first high school. And then we delved into it a little bit more and found that during the Civil War you had 80 students from the high school. Actually 40 students from the high school had been in the Civil War, and 80 students had gone off to the Civil War. 40 were in high school, and 40 were not in high school. They were elementary and junior high. They were drummers.
Wow.
And carrying flags and things like that. So that's been, and many more items like that. And I think we've become more more comfortable with the people.
So it sounds like geographically the tour isn't so different, but it's in terms of the information shared, you're trying to sort of reshape it, sharpen it, focus it, or broaden it to whatever is
exactly
going for.
Right. The other thing, one other point, is that we get a lot of people from outside of the Racine area. One of the things that we've done is we've created a small little card, very similar to a third of an 8.5 by 11 card, where we give people that are out of town a note saying stay a bit longer. So since we have them here, they could go up to, we point out some items that people could just drive to up, such as the lighthouse or the Blue Water Beach, North Beach, or the zoo, or Racine, old Racine College, and that type of thing, as well as a Johnson things. But it's a very, we're located on Main Street, and you can take Main Street up and then turn right as far as you can, and then turn right and you've got the lighthouse. And it's an easy way to travel around. So we want to have people stick around a little longer.
Mm-hmm. Good idea. So geographically, Chris, where does the tour begin? Where does it end?
And it begins and ends at Racine Heritage Museum at 7th and Main Streets. It leaves from the museum and heads down toward the river, and then kind of a little bit jogs west and then circles back to the museum. So you get beautiful views of the lakefront. You get a real strong sense of the layout of the city, a really good feel for what it would be like to be in Racine, 120 years ago, 100, 150 years ago. And you get a really good sense of how, well, for my part, I took the tour at the end of the summer last year, and, you know, after 29 years, still learned quite a bit. But for me, it was the ability to visualize Racine as a bustling commercial port, which, you know, it was the fifth busiest on the Great Lakes for a time. And just the sense of that, the magnitude of what that means through the pictures and through the stories and through engaging the geography of the area really kind of reinforces a sense of its history.
Hmm. How many different tour guides do you have?
Seven.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying that each one, in a sense, brings their own flavor to the to the experience.
Sure, mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah,
and it's we've had when we started this, we had some people that were they were very excited about it, and we have some people from Racine, but we also have people that moved here to Racine maybe 15 years ago or 20 years ago and are excited to participate in it. And so we don't have a huge group, but we have enough that we can do tours. We've also done some tours where somebody calls the Heritage Museum and says,
look, can you do, our group is coming, can you do a tour for us and that type of thing? And we're more than willing to give that a shot as well.
Mm-hmm. Do the tours happen rain or shine?
Yes.
Yes.
We do, or fog. We do provide, we do have some umbrellas that we can share with people. Yeah. But yes, rain or shine.
So what time do they occur on Saturdays, right?
Saturdays at 10:30 in the morning and 1 p.m. Each tour, like I said, takes about an hour and 40 minutes. The museum is open a little longer on Saturdays this summer, so people taking the tour can come and visit after the tour. We have had some requests from different groups, local groups, church fellowship groups. Seems to be a very good opportunity for people that just want to get together and get out together, socialize together on a Saturday morning. It's a really good learning opportunity for people from outside the area, but also, you know, right around here.
Mm.
And it's a walking tour that there's there's one small little incline, and that's from Lake Avenue up to Main Street. It's a gradual, but we don't have any steps or anything like that. So people in wheelchairs, we've had last year it was wheelchair. It was easy to move around on that. And I think we've had last year Real Racine that has been very supportive of us on promoting this. They also had a group of reporters from an area that came in, and we gave them a tour also of that. So we'll tell anybody anytime about the downtown area that we have in the history.
So this is the kind of thing where I think you generally take reservations. Is that right? You prefer for people to kind of call ahead and reserve a spot on a tour?
Yes, yes, reservations. Make them online. You can call the museum, 262-636-3926, or even better, just go to the website, racineheritagemuseum.org. It's very easy to make a reservation. We use Eventbrite for that. It's a safe, secure way to set up your tour.
We also hope that they can give us a call, hopefully about 48 hours before the event, like Thursday or Friday planning, rather than showing up on Saturday. We like to keep the tour groups around 10 to 12 max. Mm. So if we have more people there, it's not fair to the group as well as the tour guide. So what we would do, if we know how many are coming, we can set up and have two or three guides there to make it a bit more workable.
Right, yeah. Otherwise, it gets a little unwieldy if you have too big a group.
Yes.
And I think the cost is $10 then. So this ends up being something that ultimately benefits the museum in a really nice way.
Yes, it does.
Very good. So again, these Saturday walking heritage tours of downtown Racine began this past Saturday through the fog, but they're going to be continuing.
Sunshiny.
In the sunshine, yes.
Yeah. Greg, thank you so very, very much, and WGTD for helping us out and helping us spread the word on these things.
Well, it's very kind. It's a great addition to kind of the cultural landscape, and it's a wonderful idea that my wife and I didn't get a chance to do last summer, but we're looking forward to doing it this summer at some point. I'm just looking ahead. Right now it's looking like it's going to be partly sunny and in the mid to upper 80s on Saturday.
So terrific.
A perfect day to go down to close to the lakefront. Before we finish up, Chris, are there any particular exhibits at the Racine Heritage Museum that you want to highlight for people that you hope they will take the time to investigate at some point?
Well, right now, I certainly encourage people to come and visit the Underground Railroad in Racine County exhibit. It's an exhibit that is received national attention as part of the National Park Service Underground Railroad Network to Freedom. We are working to develop an exhibit right now on the Racine works of artist and designer Alfonso Iannelli. That should be taking place later this year. We have just engaged in partnership with Walden School photojournalist Mark Hertzberg to document the artwork that is sort of integral to the Walden School building before it is vacated by the project. And we're looking at a way of developing an online exhibit that would use that art to kind of interpret the story of the unique collaborative environment of the school and as a forum to bring people together to talk about it. So we're kind of moving in some new directions right now. You talked about getting outside of our walls. One of the ways we can do that is also in a virtual environment. So you'll be seeing some new things down the road here.
Well, since Racine has, for so many decades, been a city of innovation, it only makes sense that the Racine Heritage Museum would embody that spirit by sort of thinking beyond the obvious, thinking outside the box, as it were, the box of the museum,
yes.
and serving the community in some innovative ways. Remind our listeners of what they should do if they want more information about the museum or these heritage walking tours, or want to support you in one way or another.
They can visit the museum again. RacineHeritageMuseum.org is our email address. All the information on the tour should be right there. Feel free to call 262-636-3926. And we are open at 9 o'clock today, so if you're in the neighborhood, stop on in.
Very good. Chris Paulson is the executive director of the Racine Heritage Museum, and Jim Wardrop, jack of all trades, an indispensable member of the family there at the Racine Heritage Museum, and one of the guides for these heritage walking tours, which are happening every Saturday now through the beginning of September. Gentlemen, great to have both of you on the morning show today. Thank you so much, and best wishes, and happy walking.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks
for having us.
Thank you. tomorrow on the morning show, my interview with David McLean, a comedian and writer and actually a instructor of creative writing at Lawrence University and the author of a wonderful